हरिः ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्थु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तमविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 63, chapter 4. Drumila explains the incarnations of the Godhead to King Nini. Sri Drumila continued, "In the beginning, the original Supreme Personality manifested the form of Brahma through the material mode of passion in order to create this universe. The Lord manifests his form as Vishnu, the Lord of sacrifice and protector of the twice-born Brahmins and their religious duties to maintain the universe. And when the universe is to be annihilated, the same Supreme Lord employs the material mode of ignorance and manifests the form of Rudra. The created living beings are thus always subjected to the forces of creation, maintenance, and destruction." Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, "The guna avatars are described. The Purusha appeared as Brahma, Sata Driti, for activities of creation by Raja Yoga, as Vishnu, the protector of the Dharma and of the Brahmins, for maintenance, and as Shiva for destruction." Right, so we see is also in the human life that one of the qualities of humans is that aspect of protecting the Brahmins, right? So five aspects, the Brahmins, the cows, the women, the children, and the elderly. Then these five, that's considered human, like that. So we see is that for maintenance, because that's the difficult part, Vishnu himself does that. To create something, to destroy something, that's much more easy. So we see is even in the modern society, creating new things is they're quite good at it. Destroying, you know, things they're quite good at. But maintaining, that's the difficulty. Like that. Especially these five aspects that we talked about. That's always where there's a weakness. So he specifically became protector of Dharma and the Brahmins, right, who are following Dharma. So and any concept or philosophy that is opposed to Dharma, opposed to the Brahminical position, then is not on a strong footing, not at least with Vishnu. You can try Brahma or Shiva, but not Vishnu. Sri Drumila continued, "Narayan Rishi, who is perfectly peaceful and is the best of sages, was born as the son of Dharma and his wife Murti, the daughter of Daksha. Narayan Rishi taught the devotional service of the Lord, by which material work ceases, and he himself perfectly practiced this knowledge. He is living even today, his lotus feet served by the greatest of saintly persons. King Indra became fearful, thinking that Narayan Rishi would become very powerful by his severe penances and seize Indra's heavenly kingdom," right? Because they were performing austerities. Because that's what they're doing things to for the benefit of the universe. So they're not going to be involved in, you know, trying to, manage and arrange. That Indra and that's doing. But now, Indra is going to look at it that anybody who comes powerful wants to manage the universe. That's why he's there. Right? He did austerities to get to that position. So he figures anybody else is also. Otherwise, what would be the drive to perform such severe austerities unless you're going to become Indra? Right? So that's the whole point, is he'll always think like that, rather than they're doing it for some other purpose. "Thus Indra, not knowing the transcendental glories of the incarnation of the Lord, set Cupid and his associates to the Lord's residence in Badrikashrama. As the charming breezes of spring created a most sensuous atmosphere. Cupid himself attacked the Lord with arrows in the form of the irresistible glances of beautiful women. 6 and 7. DBT purport states, This verse and the following 9 verses illustrate the personality of Godhead's opulence of supreme renunciation. The word atan mahi gyaha, not understanding the glories of the Lord, indicates that Lord Indra was placing the personality of Godhead on the same level as he himself. But at least he was giving him that credit. He wasn't putting it lower like, you know, others, but still it's not good enough because it's equal to, you know, is also. He was considering the Lord an ordinary enjoyer who would be attracted by mundane sex life. Indra's plot to cause the downfall of Narayan Rishi could not affect the Lord, but it reveals the short-sightedness of Indra himself. Yeah, again, here's a big sightedness, and then short-sighted like this. Because Indra is attached to his heavenly kingdom, he took it for granted that the Supreme Lord was performing austerities to acquire such flickering phantasmagoria as the kingdom of heaven. Yeah. Sri Drumila continued, the primeval Lord, understanding the offense committed by Indra, did not become proud. Instead, he spoke laughingly as follows to Cupid and his followers, who were trembling before him. Do not fear, O mighty Madana, O wind god and wives of the demigods. Right? Because we saw before is that the charming breezes have to be there. So that means the wind god has to create that. Right? So Cupid is there. He has that attractive feature. The wind is blowing. The wives of the demigods, all these different things, they're all... So then in this way it creates the atmosphere. Right? Rather, please accept these gifts I am offering you and kindly sanctify my ashram by your presence. My dear King Nimi, when Narayan Rishi thus spoke, eradicating the fear of the demigods, they bowed their heads with shame and addressed the Lord as follows, to invoke his compassion, right? Because he wasn't agitated. Now, a lot of other sages, then when they don't respond well to this treatment, as we see is another name for Cupid, like Madana, as he here, as means he attracts or bewilders. He's also known as Ananga, because one time he did that with Lord Shiva and he burned him to ashes, right? So, you know, it goes one way or the other, like that. This means either you get him or he gets you, you know, like that. So when they're not disturbed, then immediately you think, okay, now they're going to get cursed or something. But then when you see how nicely he's behaving, then their fear goes down. Then now they'll offer their respects and everything like that. And they bowed, eradicating the fear. When Narayan Rishi thus spoke, eradicating the fear of the demigods, they bowed their heads with shame and addressed the Lord as follows, to invoke his compassion. Our dear Lord, you are always transcendental beyond the reach of illusion, and therefore you are forever changeless. Your causeless compassion towards us, despite our great offense, is not at all unusual in you. Since innumerable great sages who are self-satisfied and free from anger and false pride bow down humbly at your lotus feet. The demigods place many obstacles on the path of those who worship you to transcend the temporary modes of the demigods and reach your supreme abode. Those who offer the demigods their assigned shares and sacrificial performances encounter no such obstacles, right? So those who are trying to go back to Godhead, the demigods create obstacles just to inspire them to go back to Godhead, right? Because if you don't want to be here, then they'll produce obstacles that you really don't want to be here, right? Because you're inspired to not be here and go back to Godhead because of the difficulties. Right now, if the difficulties go away, you may not be inspired to continue on your path back to Godhead. So the demigods then, you know, in service to the Lord, continue to create difficulties so that you're continuously inspired to go back to Godhead. Right?
Same than Maya, Maya also?
She's putting up these obstacles to test on whether you belong here in the spiritual world.
Okay.
She puts them up as a test, and if you pass the test, then she'll recommend you to go back to Godhead. But if you don't pass the test, then, you know, how you say? You know, it's just back to another, you know, ordinary, I say, path of samsara, you know. Like.
So the demigod are first and after Maya?
No, it's Maya's there. And if you're still determined, then the demigods would get involved. And then when nothing works, then you see, okay, then this guy's serious.
Okay.
Right? Because sometimes just by the obstacles, then you can get upset with Krishna, or this Krishna consciousness doesn't work. Or, you know, like this. Yeah. The demigods, okay. Those who offer the demigods their assigned shares in sacrificial performances encounter no such obstacles, right? Because, you know, they're performing the obstacle worshipping the demigod. That's what they want. They want to be in the material world, so then there's no obstacle. But because you are the direct protector of your devotee, he is able to step over the head of whatever obstacle the demigods place before him. So you surrender to Krishna, then there's no problem with the demigods, with Maya, with anything. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. The devatas say, what to speak of you? Even your devotees do not care for us. By your mercy. Okay. We have created many obstacles for them, right? We create the obstacles. They don't care for us. Why do devatas create obstacles? The devotees surpass Swarga and attain Vaikuntha. This means the devatas are envious of the devotees. Others, the performers of karma, do not have obstacles. Why? They have given the proper share of sacrifice to Indra and others, like farmers giving to the king. The Lord says, will my devotees fall because of your obstacles? The devatas answer, no, certainly not, because you are the Lord of the devatas and the protector of the devotee. The devotee puts his foot on the head of the obstacles, so there is no worry that the devotees fear any obstacles. So, because you've surrendered to the Lord, they put the obstacles, but because you've surrendered to Krishna, then you'll cross over those obstacles. So they're not worried. They get to express their envy, and it doesn't create any problem. You know, ultimately.
But this is a pure devotee.
Yes. Yes, it works. The devotees continue. David does continue. So they know. That's the point.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's it. The David has continued. Some men practice severe penances to cross beyond our influence, which is like an immeasurable ocean with endless waves of hunger, thirst, heat, cold, and other conditions brought about by the passing of time, such as the sensuous wind and the urges of the tongue and sex organs. Nonetheless, although crossing this ocean of sense gratification through severe penances, such persons foolishly drown in a calf's hoofprint when conquered by useless anger. So even they conquer all that, then they'll get angry, and they'll get conquered in that way, right? So so that's why it's because anger is destructive, and so it's not going to have any benefit. Thus, they exhaust the benefit of their difficult austerities in vain. So they've done all this, get so much material power, and then wasted in anger, right? So when it says like a curse, it uses up the potency because it's because of the anger. Like that. It takes potency for it to work, but the point is this, in anger, then you curse. Right? If you're not angry, you don't curse.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Those who perform austerities do not worship you have two destinations. They become controlled by us or by anger. Under our control, they pursue enjoyment of their desires. That is stated in this verse. Some persons surpass us. We're like a limitless ocean, bestowing hunger, thirst, heat, cold, and rain, arising from the qualities of past, present, future, as well as the wind of the Malaya hills, which gives pleasure to the skin, and bestowing pleasure of the tongue and genital. But they drown in the water of a calf's hoofprint, you know, because they're talking about this huge ocean, limitless ocean, that they're dealing with. But they cross that. Right? But drown in the water of a cow's hoof print. Just as a person who is drowning and out of control gives up a treasure he has placed on his head, they destroy their difficult austerities by cursing and anger, and thus that austerity becomes useless for liberation or enjoyment. Right? You know, if someone's they're drowning, they have something valuable on their head, it's too heavy, then they'll drop that so that they can swim.
Yes.
So, just, but it means that it's for no benefit. you've gone to so much trouble to get that thing, but it's all lost. So in the same way, by cursing and anger, then they lose. Sri Drumila continued, while the demigods were thus praising the Supreme Lord, the all-powerful Lord suddenly manifested before their eyes many women who were astonishingly gorgeous, decorated with fine clothes and ornaments, and all faithfully engaged in the Lord's service. And so they were. So that's the difference. Is they come up with the who's there? Carry on. You want the chair? Chair. We have a chair. We're talking about Drumila's talking about the pastime of Naranarayan Rishi. And so the demigods have just said, tried their bit, didn't work, now said their bit, and now having done that, now Naranarayan is manifesting all these, many women who are astonishingly gorgeous, decorated with fine clothes and ornaments, and all faithfully engaged in the Lord's service. So we're up to that point. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, not impressed by their praises, right? He was not impressed by their coming there and trying to agitate his mind. So all the heavenly girls are coming, they create nice situations, he's not impressed. Then they offer their prayers, he's not impressed. So now he manifests all these girls and they're now impressed, right? He showed the forms of women produced by his yoga who were serving him. He showed the devatas this to curb their pride in their own beauty. Otherwise, they think they're so beautiful and so willing to be able to attract. But then they couldn't attract the Lord. And then he produces women who are way more beautiful than they are. So then, you know, you start to see things in proportion there. Sri Drumila continued. When the followers of the demigods gazed upon the fascinating mystic beauty of the women created by Naranarayan Rishi, and smelled the fragrance of their bodies, the minds of these followers became bewildered. Indeed, upon seeing the beauty and magnificence of such women, the representatives of the demigods were completely diminished in their own opulence. The Supreme Lord of Lords then smiled slightly and told the representatives of heaven, who were bowing down before him, please choose one of these women, whomever you find suitable for you. She will become the ornament of the heavenly planets. Vibrating the sacred syllable Om, the servants of the demigods selected Urvasi, the best of the Apsaras. Placing her in front of them, out of respect, they returned to the heavenly planets. The servants of the demigods reached the assembly of Indra, and thus, while all the residents of the three heavens listened, they explained to Indra the supreme power of Narayana. When Indra heard of Naranarayan Rishi and became aware of his offense, he was both frightened and astonished. So this is another manifestation of this pastime. We see earlier in the Bhagavatam it's been described a different manifestation. Sri Drumila concluded, the infallible Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, has descended into this world by his various partial incarnations, such as Lord Hamsa, the swan, Dattatreya, the four Kumaras, and our own father, the mighty Rishabdev. By such incarnations, the Lord teaches the science of self-realization for the benefit of the whole universe. In his appearance as Hayagriva, he killed the demon Madhu, and thus brought the Vedas back from the hellish planet Patala. Really, Madhu had taken the Vedas to Patala. In his appearance as fish, the Lord protected Satyavrata Manu, the earth and her valuable herbs. He protected them from the waters of annihilation. As a boar, the Lord killed Hiranyaksha, the son of Diti, while delivering the earth from the universal waters. And as a tortoise, he lifted Mandara Mountain on his back so that nectar could be churned from the ocean. The Lord saved the surrendered king of the elephants, Gajendra, who was suffering terrible distress from the grips of a crocodile. The Lord also delivered the tiny ascetic sages called the Valakilyas when they fell into the water in a cow's hoofprint, and Indra was laughing at them. The Lord then saved Indra. I'm sure it didn't work out good for Indra after that one. I don't remember the details, but it has to not be good, right?
Their father cursed him.
Sorry?
The father curses Indra. The Valakaya's father. He curses Indra, I think.
He curses Indra. Okay, so they don't. They're... Yeah, why do when you have someone else to do it for you? The Lord then saved Indra when Indra was covered by darkness due to the sinful reaction for killing Vritasura. When the wives of the demigods were trapped in the palace of the demons without any shelter, the Lord saved them. In his incarnation as Narsingha, the Lord killed Hiranyakashipu, the king of demons, to free the saintly devotees from fear. The Supreme Lord regularly takes advantage of the wars between the demons and the demigods to kill the leaders of the demons. The Lord thus encourages the demigods by protecting the universe through his various incarnations during the reigns of each Manu. The Lord also appeared as Vamana and took the earth away from Bali Maharaj on the plea of begging 3 steps of land. The Lord then returned the entire world to the sons of Aditi. Lord Parasaram appeared in the family of Bhrigu as a fire that burned to ashes the dynasty of Haihaya. Thus, Lord Parasaram rid the earth of all Kshatriyas 21 times. The same Lord appeared as Ramachandra, the husband of Sita Devi, and thus he killed the 10-headed Ravana, along with all the soldiers of Lanka. May that Sri Ram, whose glories destroy the contamination of the world, be always victorious. To diminish the burden of the earth, the unborn Lord will take birth in the Yadu dynasty and perform feats impossible even for the demigods. Propounding speculative philosophy, the Lord, as Buddha, will bewilder the unworthy performers of Vedic sacrifices. Right, because in other words, they're performing the sacrifice, but their purpose in doing it is totally wrong. And so they're just harassing living entities. And as Kalki, the Lord will kill all the low-class men posing as rulers at the end of the age of Kali. Almighty Armed King, there are innumerable appearances and activities of the Supreme Lord of the universe, similar to those I have already mentioned. In fact, the glories of the Supreme Lord are unlimited. Conclusion. One could cross over the ocean of material existence only by surrendering to the Lord, right? That point you were making this morning. That's it. Yeah, somehow or another it seems to keep coming back to this point.
It seems.
The demigods place many obstacles on the path of those who worship the Lord to transcend the temporary abodes of the demigods and reach his supreme abode. But because he is the direct protector of his devotee, the devotee is able to step over the head of whatever obstacle the demigods place before him. On another hand, those who perform austerities but do not worship the Lord have 2 destinations. They become either controlled by the devatas or by anger. Under the devatas' control, they pursue enjoyment of their desires. Those who reject the material enjoyment destroy their difficult austerities by cursing and anger. And thus that austerity becomes useless for liberation or enjoyment. Right? Because why are they becoming angry? It's because the senses aren't being taken care of, so there's frustration. Right? And then their goal is coming to the liberated platform, they'll be happy there. But the point is the soul can't actually be happy there because it's not complete. Right? It's sat, but there's no chit, no ananda. Right? In that existence. So they can't be satisfied, they can't be happy. So only the devotee, they're in the liberated position, we see they're peaceful. So that's the uniqueness, is they don't become upset. Those who reject the material enjoyment destroy their difficult austerities by cursing and anger. And thus, that austerity becomes useless for liberation or enjoyment. Because the Lord is the master of the devatas and the protector of the devotee, there is no worry that the devotees fear any obstacle. So you surrender to Krishna, and then Krishna takes care. That means we're always surrendered, not that we surrender and then step back and go, okay, where's the benefit? Right?
This is a difficult thing.
Yes. We want both. Chapter 5. Narada concludes his teaching to Vasudeva. Pratigya. One who faithfully applies the principles of devotional service, as described by the Navi Yogendras, becoming free from material association, will attain the Supreme Lord. Chapter 5 summarizes questions and answers. Maharaj Nimi asked the Navi Yogendras question 10.11 of Srimad Bhagavatam from 11.51. King Nimi further inquired, "My dear Yogendras, all of you are most perfect in knowledge of the science of the self. Therefore, kindly explain to me the destination of those who, for the most part, never worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, who are unable to quench their material desires, and who are not in control of them all themselves." Sri Chamasa answers this question in verses 2 to 18. Maharaj Nimi asked the Navi Yogendras question 11.11 of Srimad Bhagavatam from 11.519. King Nimi inquired, "In what colors and forms does the Supreme Personality of Godhead appear in each of the different ages? And with what names and by what types of regulated principles is the Lord worshipped in human society?" Sri Kartabhajana answers this question in verses 20 through 42. Adhyaya Prakashita. In the fifth chapter, Chamasa describes the condition of those who do not worship the Lord, and Kartabhajana describes the Yuga avatars. Right, so, who don't worship the Lord, then what is their condition? And then, you avatars themselves. Sardarta Darshani 11.5.1. Right, because before he mentioned other avatars in that, so now he's asking specifically about the Yuga avatars. From the face, arms, thighs, and feet of the primeval person, Lord Vishnu, are born correspondingly in order of the mode of goodness, passion, and ignorance, the four varnas, brahmanas, and so on, and also the four different ashramas. If the members of the four ashramas and four varnas do not worship Lord Sri Hari, who is himself directly the origin of their own creation, they will simply fall down. Right? Because they're expanded from the Lord to perform those particular duties that are there. That's the whole point. So, if they don't do those things, then they'll fall from their position. So it's not that, oh, we're Vaishnavas, we can do anything. But that means then you always have to be on that transcendental platform. Then yes, you could do anything. But the point is why would you, since it's about pleasing the Lord? So there's no need to do anything. You know, it's like Prabhupada said about our position. We're taking up the duties of the Brahmins and taking a leading role in that. That's because the Brahmins aren't doing it. It has to be done. So it's an emergency, so we're doing these things. But if the Brahmins step forward and actually start to do it, then we don't need to be involved because they'll do such a good job of it, right? They know the Sanskrit, they have the lifestyle. They don't have all the problems and social issues we do. So at that point, then we won't. So the point is that if there's no one doing, yes, then they're emergency. But to create an issue about something that's going on because you want to do it, when someone else who's qualified is doing, then why would you do that? Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. If we don't, then we'll fall from our position. So one has to do what one's duties are. And then it works very nicely. Because it's just something, some way to serve Krishna. That's all. We want to serve Krishna. Right? So it's not about our whim. It's just about the opportunity to serve the Lord. Okay? Among these classes, women and shudras, who generally have no contact with the hearing and chanting of Harikatha, are on account of their very ignorance special candidates for the mercy of great souls. The members of the other three varnas, becoming fit for achieving the lotus feet of Hari by second birth through Vedic initiation, Shrauta Janma, nevertheless become confused by concocting interpretations of the Vedas, presuming themselves to be great scholars, right? So that's the difficulty. Although not understanding the essential meaning of karma, they become flatterers of other deities in their greed for fruit of results and ridicule the devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So they become good in knowledge or ritual, different skills, and then from that, because of performing those activities, they get facilities, they get wealth. And then they'll see the Vaishnavs then don't necessarily are worried about those because it's not a matter of social prestige. For them it is. If you're the biggest Brahmin, you know, you're the leader in the rituals, you're a leader in the scholars, or if you're a leader in both, that's like, you know, how you say, really well established. You know, so that's the So then they see everything from that, and from that, then they get so much material benefit. Then they see the Vaishnavas; they're not really interested in that, and don't really have much material benefit necessarily. So they don't worry about that. You know, then they see that this is there, then they criticize them because they think what they're doing, that's the all in all. But they're great scholars. They missed the point of the Veda. That's the difficulty.
Same thing happened even during the time of Lord Chaitanya, when everybody was very proud.
Yes, yes. It's always been there. You know, yeah. We see with every time that you always have those scholars and that. Mm-hmm. But Krishna, not as many scholars step forward, as more with Kshatriyas and like that. But yeah, with Lord Chaitanya, with any of the Vaishnava Acharyas, you always see. They are fixed in family life, right? So, Sridhavatra, right? Attached to mundane gossip and indifferent to the devotional service of Vishnu and the Vaishnavas. They are maddened by material opulences and pleasures, devoid of real discrimination and intelligence. Not that they're not smart and they're not discriminatory, like they're special, everybody else is not. That takes discrimination, right? And always function on the mental platform. But such attachment to family life and so on is most natural for the mass of people, even though it is against the best advice of Shastra. So they're doing all this, which the mass of people are already doing, and then they're considering themselves superior? What's the point? You know, if they say, well, we're better at it, but then it just means you're a bigger Shudra than everybody else. So then, to become disentangled from such life in all respects is the principal teaching of the Vedas. Real wealth is that conducive to the faithful execution of the duty of the soul, not that which exists simply for selfish sense gratification. As a consequence of the desire to indulge the senses, men and women couple together to produce children. Engaging in animal slaughter, apart from that necessary for performance of sacrifice, these human animals themselves suffer violence in the next life. If, because of excessive greed for one's own pleasure, one commands violence against living beings, he is also attacking Lord Shri Hari, who is present in all bodies of all living entities as the Supersoul. Opposed to Lord Vasudev, ignorant self-cheaters completely carry out their own ruination and enter into hell. And so they don't consider the Lord, they don't consider the devotees, they don't consider the position of the material world. So not considering all those things, they'll see, oh, I'm very successful, I'm doing nicely. But they don't see is that, well, actually you're supposed to get out of here, not make a nice place here. That they have a nice place, that's from following the Vedic knowledge and all that. But the point is what do they do with it once they have it? They don't engage in the Lord's service. So then it doesn't work out really well for them. So, yeah.
Can we say, Maharaj, because of lack of Vedic association?
Lack of
devotee association.
Yes, lack of devotees. So, but even you see is they don't appreciate the devotees. Yes. So they can't take advantage of it. So yes, it's lack of association. But the opportunity to gain that association, they don't have that proclivity. So they won't take it up. Like that. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Hari, accepts in each of the different yugas various colors, names, and forms, and is worshipped by various prescribed processes. In Satya Yuga, the Supreme Lord is white in complexion, has four arms, dressed as a brahmachari, is known by such names as Hamsa, and is served by the practice of meditational yoga. In Treta Yuga, he is red in color and four-armed, is the personification of sacrifice, is characterized by the symbols of the sacrificial spoon, ladle, etc., is called by such names as yajna, and is worshipped by Vedic sacrifices. In Dwapara Yuga, he is of dark blue complexion, wears a yellow garment, is marked by Srivatsa and other signs, has such names as Vasudeva, and is worshipped in his deity form by the regulations of the Vedas and Tantras. In Kali Yuga, he is golden in color, is accompanied by associates who are his primary and secondary limbs and his weapons. Right? So he doesn't come with weapons, his associates are the weapons, because you're trying to destroy ignorance. And so the devotees through the preaching and that. right? And then the Lord performing pastimes with them, then one gets attracted. So it all works nice, right? Okay, so yeah, the Lord Kali Yuga is absorbed in Krishna Kirtana and is worshipped by the performance of Sankirtana Yajna. Since in Kali Yuga all the goals of human life can be achieved simply by the glorification of the holy name of Sri Hari, those who can appreciate the real essence of things praise Kali Yuga. In Kali Yuga, many people in South India, Dravida Desh, in places where the Tamraparni, Kritamala, Kaveri, and Mahanadi rivers flow, will be dedicated to the devotional service of the Supreme Lord. Persons who give up all false ego and take shelter of Lord Hari are no longer debtors to the demigods or anyone else. The personality of Godhead, Sri Hari, appears in the hearts of devotees who know no other shelter than Him, and causelessly drives away all evil desires from the devotees' hearts. Videharaj Nimi, having heard elaborate descriptions of Bhagavad Dharma from the mouths of the Navayogendra, offered worship to them with a satisfied mind. They then disappeared. Devarshi Narada thereupon instructed Vasudeva about the ultimate shelter of devotional service. He told Vasudeva that although Lord Krishna has become his son, having appeared in this world to free the earth of its burden, he should still not think of Lord Krishna as his child, but rather as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even by meditating upon Krishna in a spirit of enmity, such kings as Shishupal attain an equal status to him. So to attempt to say anything more about the perfect achievement of great souls such as Vasudeva, who enjoy intimate loving relations with Krishna, would be a useless endeavor. Because you can't, we wouldn't be able to. We can appreciate the position, but his experience, this and that, that we can't. So we just say the position, how glorious it is, and stop there. Shloka Anusharanam, summary of verses. Verses 1 to 18, Maharaj Nimi's 8th question, answered by Chamasa. 19 to 42, Maharaj Nimi's 9th question, answered by Kadabhajana. 43 to 52, Narada concludes his teachings to Vasudeva. Verses 1 to 18. Maharaj Nimi's 8th question, answered by Chamasa. King Nimi further inquired, "My dear Yogendras, all of you are most perfect in knowledge of the science of the self. Therefore, kindly explain to me the destination for those who for the most part, never worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, who are unable to quench their material desires, and who are not in control of them of their own selves." Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, "Surprised that some people reject the Lord of great fame, known through his appearances by his mercy, King Nimi asks a question, 'O knowers of Atma, what is their position? What is their destination?'" Sri Chamasa said, "Each of the four social orders headed by the Brahmanas was born through different combination of the modes of nature, from the face, arms, thighs, and feet of the Supreme Lord in his universal form." Right? So it's that material form of the Lord. And so these parts of the Lord's body then perform different functions in the universal creation. So then coming from that, then the Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras, and also then the Ashrams, then they come to take part in protect and help in the application of these various areas of the universal form. Does that make sense? So the whole idea is that, and if we understand everything's working, it's all the universal form, a manifestation of that. Everything's pervaded by that. Where's the question of Varnashram doesn't work in this age? You know what I'm saying? That's not a question. Right? If we're intelligent, that can't be a question. How to apply it, what would be its application in this age, what degree do we take it? Now that's a discussion. Yes. But the doubt whether it's applicable or not, that is not a discussion. Then that's like saying, well it's Kali Yuga, does Krishna consciousness actually apply in this age? Does that make sense? That's the point, is that appreciating these things means you take that first step, that my conditioning functions the way it does because of its connection to Krishna. Right? So Krishna defines how he wants to use his hands and legs and all that. Now one could say, no, but Krishna, all his senses of his body are all interchangeable. Yes, they are. That means that he wants to do these things. Not that we decide now Krishna is going to do this with, you know, his nose or something. We're going to play cricket with his nose. No, it means if he wants to do that, that's up to him. But it's not our business. Something's on. So, yeah, something's on. Yeah, it's very important. So then, that's why then these positions are there. It's just to then, so that each soul has a position that they can serve the Lord. Because everyone's doing the same thing. Like, let's say, you have the whole temple. Okay? And you have so many devotees in the temple. Right? This is not too much of an archaic example, is it? Our temple was one house, but it had, like 30 or more devotees in it. So, one regular house. Yeah. So, nowadays, like that. Yeah. We won't go and deities,
still in India,
sorry?
In India, it works to some extent.
Yeah, okay. So in India, so then. Being here, we just take it in that kind of context. Okay. So.
Time and place
circumstance. Yeah, we're in India, so we can give the example. Okay. So now, let us say it's time to cook lunch. And everybody goes into the kitchen. Right? Now, of all the things to be done, then you have things like washing pots or making the dough or taking out the trash or bringing up the boga from the basement or all these kind of things. And so that's not the most interesting one like that. Yeah. So let's say frying something, that's fun. So now everybody in the temple wants to do that. Is it going to work? So that's the whole point. That's why there's differences of things. So the whole thing gets done because everybody does their part. So the point is to please Krishna. If it's prestige, yes, then you want to be cooking and not taking out the garbage. But if it's serving Krishna and Krishna being pleased, then if the garbage just builds up in the kitchen, how is that going to be pleasing to Krishna? So therefore, because you're doing that aspect, then the cooking goes nicely and all that. Does that make sense? So if it's pleasing Krishna, then where's the difference in Krishna consciousness? It's all pleasing to Krishna. So that's the whole point of the Varnashram system, is that we accept all these different positions. Because it's not that people have tried and can't do these things. It's that they're worried more about their social prestige and let's say, material benefits I'll get from a particular activity as opposed to another. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Now, and if we accept the Varnashram Dharma, we need to accept cooperation.
Yes, you have to accept cooperation. Well, even just the thing, we see that it's about the Lord and it's about the living entities and they're cooperating together. Now, how to define who does what? Is it just because who wants to no. fry the pakoras? No. It's the person who can fry the pakoras. So that's the whole thing. Who manages? Who can? Who does the who can? It's just who's good at what, that's what then they do. Does that make sense? And then there's a hierarchy given, so this understanding, its connection to Krishna. So the bottom is the knowledge and skill. Right? That's the actual bottom of the thing. Right? Where modern culture is looking up. Right? That's why we always say, from modern culture, you have to look up to see Varnashram. Right? Then above that is that to be able to do all those things, then you have to have some economic platform. So that's higher. Right? So without the money, then what's the point of the knowledge and skills? Right? But to have money means you have to have a stable environment in which, economics can flourish. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So that means then you have to have someone to be able to control that. And to be able to run government, that you understand what to run, what not to do, how to take care of these, and how to balance the whole thing between these, that requires the knowledge. So that's why there's an order. And what's the purpose of that knowledge? To know Krishna. So Brahmins are the top, but higher than that is actually the Vaishnavas. So therefore, then we could say everyone's by that Brahman, by their realization, but it's not necessarily the particular skill you have. So according to what is your nature, that's the one you do for Krishna. But the point is, even if you're doing a Shudra activity, you're doing it to please Krishna, you get that direct benefit. Right? Well, let's say if we're taking a more generic Varnashram system, the Shudra is getting benefit because he's serving one of the Dvijas, who is then serving whoever's above that till eventually gets to Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? Someone's Krishna conscious there, and then it percolates down. Right? But in Daiva Varnashram, no matter what the position, your activity can be directly connected to the Lord. That's the advantage of it. So for devotional service, the Vaishnavas use the Daiva Varnashram, which doesn't change the duties. It just changes that you don't need demigods and all that kind of stuff is involved in it. So it streamlines it, makes it very, very practical and straightforward. Right? Does that make sense? Like you see in Bhagavatam, that all different positions are discussed, but it doesn't get into detail. So what's discussed, that's the actual important thing to know about that area. Then the details according to your nature and capacity. Yeah? Does that make sense? Yeah.
So Varnashram is real equity.
Yes, Varnashram is real equity, because then everybody can serve the Lord. Mm-hmm. And also it means it's equity that you are doing what you can do best for the whole system. And so, therefore, this means someone with knowledge and means to be able to do the business, you have to be able to do the knowledge and skill. Right? Because the point is you can have somebody start off, means someone who can maintain business, he can start with nothing but himself and start the business. Then with time, he can engage others. So in other words, it starts with him, the lone Vaishya, and with time, he starts adding the Shudras.
Yes.
Right? Does that make sense? And the king himself, he has to understand economics, otherwise how does he balance the whole thing? But he doesn't have to make the money. He just sees that it's balanced and the economic thing is going on. Because the businessmen aren't controlling the economics. It's the guys above them, they control the economics.
Yes.
Previously, the kings would do it. Yes. Right now, I think World Bank and Federal Reserve and all those guys do it. But the point is, there's someone above the business, he just knows that he goes out, he can sell things, he can make money. But why is that? Because people above that can create the environment and all that. Mm-hmm. Governments are still required to create a peaceful environment. Right? Like that. And then without the human, then how does that work? You can say, well, you can get all those things. You know, the Brahmins, they don't all seem to know or things like that. But they know what human life is for. So in other words, the others can create the facility and situation. But you have to know what human life is for. Then you have a proper direction.
So it's very scientific.
Yes, very scientific. Like that. Yeah, that's why it's a science.
That means the Brahmins have to be expert in Dharma Shastras.
They have to be expert in all this. Because that's what they're born for, is to know this. Like that. The other things others can do. But means all the Veda is what they're to protect. And of that, then they're going to see, to the Dharma Shastras for the society within Varnashram. But going back to Godhead, they should know the Bhakti Shastras. Like that. So that's the advantage we have, is then Bhagavatam shows both. But it's showing always in connection to the Dharma. And any detail is already given in Mahabharata and other things like that. You understand what's going on. The essence is there. When you read these other literatures, then details can be picked up. Right? Is that... Yeah.
Like with Daiva Varnashram, it should work naturally because everybody is directly connecting his activity to the Supreme.
Yes.
It should become like more natural.
Yes.
But we apply it in such a way that we don't want to even.
It's because there's some material attachments is there, because the point is Naishkarma is the way anything works. Sacrifice is the human element. Right, but it's voluntary. Animals, they have to sacrifice because that's just the way it is. You know what I'm saying? They have to live in that particular environment, eat that particular food, and that's just, and as the modes provide it, that's what you get. But humans, they have that ability, they can surrender and then follow because of willingly. So because of that, then that's how then they'll progress nicely. So, yeah. So the Varnashram is there that you unwillingly takes it up and accepts. But the perfection of bhakti is, even if you don't, you can still progress. Just avoid offenses. Right? So, because Varnashram will see that respect is in place and all these things. So if not, if you're just respectful to everybody, even without the Varnashram, you can still function. But you can't take up something like the modern politically correct paradigm and think that that's going to protect your devotional creeper. Because it's just another mundane religion, but it's based on vikarma rather than on karma. Right? So that becomes the difficulty, is that it will be a very weak position to work from. Does that make sense? Any mundane position. So we say, you know, upadhi is always a problem. But the Vedic one, these upadhis, it's not that we're that, but we're in the position of that. You know, you don't have to think, I am the rice cooker, so therefore I'm cooking the rice. No, you are cooking rice, so you do the rice stuff when you're cooking rice. You don't go, well, wheat's better than rice, and so then I'll cook the rice according to how you cook wheat. You know, take the rice, you know, put it on the counter, pour some water, try to knead it into a dough. You know, no, you don't do that. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is we don't have to identify with it. So this thing, I'm not the body, that's where Varnashram starts. So to use I'm not the body to break down Varnashram, that's like, huh? We're not thinking here. Like that. So it means it's already understood. So if you think you are the body, so therefore you have to say I'm not this body, then you're starting on the Shudra platform. The Dvijas have more understanding of that. Shudras also, but they may forget, and if they forget, it's no fault. If the Dvijas forget, it actually affects their how well they can perform their duties, especially as more you move up. You know, so that it would come up, that's not a surprise. But to think that that cuts Varnashram, that means you don't actually understand what is Varnashram, what it's for. You don't understand how it relates to devotional service. And you don't understand how modern political positions connect to Krishna either. Right? You're just taking your own desire, your own perspective, and saying, because I'm a devotee, therefore whatever I think and say is also devotional. But that doesn't necessarily work. You know, it's just like the Brahman is pure, but it doesn't mean that their stool is pure. Right? But the cow is in ignorance, but their stool is pure. So therefore, only going by Shastra, then we can establish what the absolute truth is. And if it's going to be simply our whim and what us and our friends say and value, then nice, it's connected to Krishna, one will benefit. So just hopefully one remembers Krishna at the time of death, goes back to Godhead, and then over there you'll find you don't have those issues. Right? Because they're only issues of this world. Like that. Does that make sense? You know, you don't see the cowherd girls are you know, out on, you know, with their placards around Nanda Bhavan, why can't we take the cows out? You know? Let the boys stay home and churn the milk. You know, it's like you know, the yogurt and that. They don't do that. Because they actually aren't the body, so they're quite, oh, actually they are the body, so they're quite happy doing what they're doing.
Basically our own misgivings which stop us from...
It's our own misgivings, yes. Doubts, then you ask a question. Misgivings actually stop things, because misgiving means is that you, even though you understand it, you still don't want to follow it. So in other words, someone has a doubt, and they ask a question, even though, let's just for what we're instructing, it's on an issue. But you explain it, and they go, oh, okay, that's what, okay, they're fine. But if someone, even you explain it, it's logically there, everyone else in the room understands it, but and you understand it, but you won't accept it, you're still going to go on with your previous mentality, even though it's been proven that that mentality and that effort is wrong. That's a misgiving. So they're deeper. It'll take longer. But by chanting, by associating with devotees, then these start to become less and weaker and weaker. Until some point, then you're able to give them up. You see that they're not so important. So, you know, does that make sense? So if anyone has issues today, the solution is see that they're nicely engaged and have good association, and then it's just a matter of time, it'll all go away. But,
when we speak about Dharma Shastra, it's like Manu Samhita?
Manu, yes. Well, Manu is the main.
The main one, yeah.
And then all the others are, in, you could say, support of, giving
yes.
further detail.
Yes.
You know, it's just like Manu gives everything, but some things it only gives one verse.
Yes.
Like, let's say, for example, Manu, because it, by giving one verse, then either it's the conclusion or it's a detail that's not as important. But it's there. And so then if you understand the principles given in Manu, then you can apply it. And if not, then other sages then have given the Dharma Shastras to fill in those specific details. You know, what it is. Because Manu may say, do this sacrifice, you know, for this particular purpose. But he doesn't give detail. Another one will give some more understanding of it and all that. Does that make sense? Or some element of the social interaction or
yes.
So they'll give a finer detail to fill out where doubts may come up.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to see them all in line with Manu.
So they're in support of it. They're in support.
Yeah, they're in support. If you take it, oh, they're in opposition. You know, Manu says, you know, you can't get girl can't get, you know, remarry, but in Parasara it does say. But the point is there is a verse there that says. If she's married, she didn't have children. And the husband, you know, died young. You know, so it means they got married and very shortly died, and they had no children. Then she could get married, right? And then so he'll give that, and then Vatsyayana will give details that you can get remarried. But remarried, when you're remarried, then it's a different position. So then, coming into it now, if you come into a situation where means you have, let's say, same thing. She has no children. And he has no children, and you're starting off, you know, basically fresh, then one should be, how do you say, one can take more that aspect of being a first married woman. Means, in other words, you define what happens in the house, who the friends are, what happens, and all this kind of thing. That's, you can do that because everything's clean. But now, let's say you marry in, this person already has children. Then you actually have to act as a second married woman. Means you're the wife of the man, of the, you know, the husband. But the relationships that are already established, you have zero control over. I mean zero with a capital zero. Because otherwise you come into this, you destroy relations, and the whole idea of marriage is to increase, to develop. Does that make sense? So, very, very important. So the detail of this is given in Shastra. How they come in, how they deal with everybody, and all this and that. But the point is what's the principle of it, the Dharma of it, that's there. Then the detail, the knowledge and skill, that's given in other Shastras. Mahabharata gives, so many others give like this. So one has to know these things. Otherwise, then, I've seen so many families get ruined because the remarried woman comes into the family and she wants to fulfill all the desires that weren't fulfilled in the first marriage. And so then she takes everything that's there and reorganizes it for her satisfaction, but the same like messes up everybody else's life. But that's the thing. The Vedas are very careful that does not happen. So in other words, be happy. You're there, you're part of a scene, go on, just become part of that scene. Whatever's going on, assist in that scene. So that means it's another opportunity to become, have that mood of servant and develop that love for Krishna. So in the Vaishnav thing, it makes it easier. In the materialistic sense, it makes it run nicely as a machinery, but it may not in this life deal so much with your false ego and mundane desires. But at least it's better than nothing. Right? But that's the difficulty, is that we don't know these things, so then we will go against. But point is Manu already gave the one verse. Parasara extends that to a few more, and then others give more detail again. You know, like that. But we'll say Manu doesn't say. No, he does, but it's just one verse. So we won't count for one verse out of 2,000. Right? If the marriage has fallen apart, what's the most important thing for you? Marriage. So therefore, in 2,000 verses, there's one verse. Are you going to take this seriously? So therefore, Manu doesn't talk on this. Like this. But no, everything's given there. All scenarios are taken care of. But you have to know what's going on. Otherwise, it just makes a mess. Like that. Because point is the girl can make everything about herself when it's just the boy.
Yes.
And then it starts to expand. So therefore, then it's the girl and the boy, and that's there. Then you can add things to that.
Yes.
But if there's already a scene and you're joining it,
yes,
very, very different.
Yes.
And so if you go in there and try to do the same thing, then it's uncultured.
Yes.
On a good day.
Yes.
Like that. So one has to be very, very, very careful. So Dharma simply explains how things work. What's the nature of something so it works that way? And if we say, oh no, but it's Kali Yuga, Kali Yuga things still work by nature. Manda Sumanda Matayo Manda Bhagya, it still works. Right? It's not, it's Kali Yuga, we're all so smart. No. Like that. It just works in the same way. So it's just the scriptures tell us how, then we take, okay, this is the position, this is what I do, and I do that for Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? So that's just how it works. Then it works very, very nicely.
Maharaj, can we say that as a human being, the first thing to do for, in general, is to learn about Manu Samhita, and then after to become a devotee?
First is become a devotee, otherwise there's how you say, you have the particular mathematical possibilities of the frozen precipitation. It's lasting in a super hot place if you start with Manu. So unless, if you're born in a smarta practicing family that they're Pukka Brahmins, you'll just learn Manu anyway before you learn about all these things, because that's what they do. But you'll start noticing is that they're all serving Krishna. And if they're not, then you can come in contact and all that. But if somehow or another, then they don't do those things, then it's only by devotional service that you can actually be counted as human.
Yes.
See, these others are born human. Right? But here, you know, you're when you're born, you're a Shudra, but by association, you go down from there. And so only by devotional service can you appreciate Manu. Because probably once one devotee said, so should we study Manu and all this? Very early, and you can see it's like a more of a smarta kind of mentality. Prabhupada said, well, if you study Manu, Manu will say that you're a Malecha and Yavana, so you shouldn't be studying Manu, so no, you can't study Manu. Right, so Prabhupada just, it's there, he gives the essence, and we're fighting with that essence, let alone something more. Because I've seen devotees read the whole of Manu, and the only thing they can remember is that if someone steals something, then you cut off a finger or something. That's it, zero, nothing else. So they'll just go into it with their own personal issues, that's all the farther they get. So, until that kind of devotional service kicks in, that you can appreciate the human paradigm. Right? In other words, if those five that we mentioned that you have to protect, we're protecting one of them at the expense of the others, don't read Manu. When you see how to take care of it so everything's balanced, like if it's the cows, then if everybody's not out there with the cows and, you know, and growing grass and cutting grass, then it's all, then, you know, Brahmins aren't supposed to do that. That's what Vaishyas are made for. Brahmins teach that, they appreciate that, then they may have cows themselves that do run a gosha. That's supposed to be done by Vaishyas. You know, and then the management and all this, and everyone's got to do that. No, Brahmins are separate from that. You know, then the teachers and the students, it's all about the students, and, you know, at the expense of the teachers, no, they're not talking that either. You know, it's all this and that, and then the women and children go, or, you know, it's just always that you focus on one at the expense of the others. Then don't read Manu. But when you can appreciate that all these five together, then that's what Manu shows you how to balance that. Because in one situation, it's all you can see, oh, but the women here, and they seem to be in the second-rate position. But in another place, Manu says, if the women in the house are happy, the whole house is bright. And if they're not, it's not. So it's all about the women. right? It says, you insult the Kshatriya, okay, there's going to be dangerous for you. Right? So don't insult the Kshatriya. Even he's a kid, don't insult him. Because he will remember, he will get you. Okay? He has particular skills and he will find you. Right? So that's going to happen. But it says if you insult a chaste woman, it's not, it means you're in danger, yes. But you, your wife, your friends, your family, your dentist, everybody, anybody connected to you will be destroyed. Right down to the, it says branch and root. That means all the way to the end, however far the roots go, it will be destroyed. So then what are we talking here? But you have to have that balance. So you have to know how to balance it. Because the balance means something stronger one way, you also have to have the other. So if there's so many strong things said to control women, that means that there's so many other things that show their superior power and position. And then you put those together, then it balances. But nowadays, people want to drop the one and only have the other. That's how we got in the material world in the first place. We want the Lord's facilities without the Lord. We want the secondary without the primary. We want the cake, we want to eat it. We can't have the cake sitting there on the table, eat all you want, and then when the guests come over, it's still sitting there, complete. No, you've eaten it, it's gone. You know, like that. So that's the problem. That, yeah. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.